What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Small Lake City Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Nilsson, and the weather's so nice that it's finally turning into spring that I thought I would record the intro outside today. So hopefully everybody's been able to get outside and enjoy some of the nice weather. I've been able to golf, get outside and do some runs, and really excited for spring and summer to settle in. As far as the guests for this week, excited to announce Iggy and Randy. So Iggy and Randy are the first people since Corinne Benoit in some of the early episodes to reach out to me and say that they think they would be a good candidate for a guest, and this time I completely agreed. So Iggy, his story is fascinating, from being born in and growing up in Argentina to wanting to move to the U.S. to go to school and then do sound and lighting design, and led to go on some of the biggest tours and create show designs for some of the biggest artists that we know of today. And then on the other side, Randy, a professional dancer, she was in So I Think You Can Dance and made it to the top five spot in there. And then now she has been choreographing not only for dancers, but for also ice skaters as well, and has a unique perspective as we start to think about 2034 and the Olympics coming to Salt Lake. So super down-to-earth people, so fun. It was really good to get to know them a little bit better. So excited to show you guys this interview and hear more from Iggy and Randy. Enjoy. I mean, I'm excited because, like, I mean, like I was explaining to you guys a second ago, like, there's only been two people who have, like, quote, slid into the DMs and made it onto an episode. The first was Corinne Benoit, who, like, literally saw the first TikTok I ever posted and messaged me before it ever got a like. I was like, hey, can I be on the podcast? I was like, yes. We're doing it. And then the second one is you guys.
Yeah.
And so, perfect. I mean, just, I always like to start kind of like how we got here, because, so again, like, I usually get, I mean, at least one DM a day between all, like, the social platforms being like, hey, I have a cool story, can I be on? I'm like, tell me what's your story? Like, why is it interesting? What do you want to know? And, like, they're usually like, oh, I never thought of that. Or, like, this guy was like, hey, I want to start. I'm like, I started this software company that does this, this, and this, and it's so great. I'm like, well, it's, like, not that big. So, like, they're not a recognizable person. And this isn't a software podcast.
Right.
No one's coming in to be like, now tell me about this new software.
Yeah.
So I was super intrigued. I mean, just because, like, the general overview of Iggy had and talking about you, Randy, and everything, I was like, yeah, like, absolutely, let's do it.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited to have you both today. I mean, Randy and Iggy, I'm so excited to hear more of the story about, I mean, how you guys ended up here, I mean, growing up here, growing up in good old Argentina, and how that everything worked. But super excited to have you guys here, and glad that we could make it work.
Yeah, this is great. This is fun.
Thanks for having us. We love talking to people from Salt Lake who love Utah and want to see it grow. And we're two of those people for sure.
So. Yeah,
definitely. Because I mean, there's so many of those people, and it's like almost like these two different houses where, I mean, there's the people who are like, oh, I've been here, I understand this, changes are happening, nothing's going to stay the same, let's try to make the changes the most impactful and best that we can.
Yeah.
And then there's the opposite side of the house. It's like, get out of my state. And I don't want any of you here. I don't want to wait in line to go up the can anymore. I don't want any more apartment buildings.
Traffic. I hate the traffic.
Yeah.
And so it gets to the point, it's like, hey, like, listen, that's not happening. You're not going to go back and be the star high school quarterback. You're not going to get your high school sweetheart back. It's over. Like, move on.
So I'm
glad. It's always nice to see people have, like, an optimistic view of the future and everything going on and everything that you are all contributing to. But before we kind of get into what, I mean, kind of got us here today, I want to start with, like, kind of the story and how it all started. So I know, I mean, Iggy, you were, I mean, born and raised in Argentina, in Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
Tell me about what, I mean, early life was like for you.
Fun. You know, Argentina is interesting. I come from a family of business people, and I was the non-business guy. I ended up starting doing lighting design when I was 14. But luckily, my dad insisted on us getting really good education, which is why I speak English fluently. And I do spell in British English, which drives my computer crazy. And every now and then the accent sort of comes out. I studied acoustics, actually, of all things, in Argentina, because it was the closest thing I could find to, like, entertainment design.
What made you want to do that? Or was it just kind of...
So my school, I went to an English school, obviously. My school did a big musical show every year, like a big musical play, like Phantom of the Opera, that kind of stuff. And I started connecting with the vendor that brought all the lights and the sound and stuff to the school. My school had a big theater, but it was an empty theater. So I sort of latched onto them. I think they were very like, why is this 14-year-old like
in a kid? Where is his parents?
Yeah, it's like, oh, like, because I was doing shows with them outside of the school. So, like, they were like in a theater and they were like, why is he still here? And yeah, and I just started doing lighting. I wanted to do special effects for movies. Our movie industry is not that big. We have really beautiful movies, we have great stories. We don't have the budgets to blow up cars and CGI and stuff. So I ended up sort of pivoting kind of by default to live. I did pyro for a second in my school until I blew up a wall. And I think they realized that maybe giving the 16-year-old like the chance of like making his own, you know, concussion bombs was not a great idea. So that was the end of the kids doing pyro in high school. And then I ended up doing a bunch of live shows, and the closest thing I could find was acoustics. There was a live sound mixing, but they insisted we had to be able to read music, and I didn't know how to read music. So, but I was really good at physics, so I ended up doing acoustics.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so I know, I imagine your dad's like, you're not doing this. You're going to go, family business. You're going to be the business guy and make that all happen. I mean, was there a point where you're either like, I'm doing this, or he's like, I get it, go do it.
My dad was interesting. As long as you could prove stuff, you know, he was very pragmatic. And I think with the years, and Randy will agree, I've become more and more pragmatic.
We can get to that later with her.
Yeah, the Iggy bashing section. No, it's kidding. But as long as you could prove, you're like, hey, my grades are this is what I'm going to do. This is the research of the college I want to go. These are the degrees. He was happy to send you wherever you wanted to go. My grades were terrible in school. So he forced me to do a degree in Argentina first. And when I did really well in the school, once I applied, you know, I didn't want to learn geography, right? But once I applied what I wanted to learn to school, I did great. And then I came to the U.S. and did a show production degree here. But yeah, my dad was very much like, why wouldn't you want to be an engineer, an attorney, or whatever? And then do this little lighting thing for fun when you retire, right? And that's how he grew up. He was a boomer. He was that era of like, you know, he was first generation Argentinian from German, you know, escaped Germans from the Nazis. So that idea of like survival and work hard and learn languages and go to college, and that was very ingrained in him. And the funny story is one of my last projects in the U.S. before I graduated, he came to visit me. He came to my graduation, and I used to in that school we did sound and lighting. We all did a bit of everything, and I was mixing sound in the old analog soundboards, you know, massive, massive digital analog Midas console. And he sat down and he's like, well, who works here with you? I'm like, no, this is just me. And he's like, well, there's no way you know what all the buttons do. And I'm like, yeah. But my analogy for him was like, you know, like all your investments, you know, like we have a big farm in Argentina, you know, what you have planted, when it has to be harvested, what you've named all 250 horses, all these, I know what all the buttons do. Yeah. That was the first time my dad understood that this wasn't just, I go in and plug a cable and then I go drink in the back lounge of the bus. Like there's actually stuff to do that is complicated and you need to learn. And that was the thing, the day that my dad realized that I wasn't just, you know, a hippie or something. I don't know. Like, yeah, that was interesting.
So by the time that you were, traveling and, quote, being like a roadie, unquote, were you still in Argentina doing that, or you already come here?
Yeah, well, sort of. Argentina just doesn't have a touring world like we do here, you know. So I would do a lot of shows. But Argentina, I did a lot of nightclubs. I kind of got into that world. So when I moved to the U.S., I remember the first time I went to bed at like 11 o'clock at night, and it was weird because I was
just going to bed so early.
Yeah. You could see the veins in my face because I hadn't seen the sun in like years, because our clubs, you know, I used to close clubs at like 9 in the morning, you know, and then sleep till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Exactly. So it was a lot of nightclubs, a lot of theater stuff in Argentina, not really touring. I was also, you know, super. I was still in college. I couldn't just disappear and go on tour. Yeah. And then when I got to the U.S. and started working here.
And where did you go to school for your sound and production?
Show production, went to a place called Full Sail in Florida. Cool. And Full Sail is a little interesting place. It's like super expensive stuff. It's a lot of people get mocked from going to Full Sail, and I understand why. Also, you get out of it as much as you put into it.
Got it.
So if you show up and you come up with a degree and think you're going to get a roadie job or whatever kind of job, really, you're not going to get it. It's all about, have you really put in the time to learn the stuff? And are you humble enough to go, I actually still don't know anything? Then it works well. So a lot of people kind of like, are very shocked that I go to Full Sail because I don't have that attitude. And I'm like, I just work for stuff. Yeah.
Make it work.
Yeah.
Did the things I needed to. And here we are.
Yeah.
So you graduated, started traveling. I mean, what kind of shows were some of your first shows that you started travel with? Or
so I think I did some local stuff. So I got hired by a company out of Chicago called Upstaging. They're a really, really big vendor, like probably one of the best vendors in the country, in the world. They provide lighting and stuff for concerts. So I couldn't travel out of the country. And most, even the U.S. tours, ping Canada. So I couldn't cross the border.
See you guys. I'll see you and come back.
Yeah. And I couldn't do it. So yeah, I did the Boston Pops and like whoever happened to come to Chicago for a second. And the first sort of tour that I did, this is going to be so weird, was a festival run with Kid Rock.
Yes.
And I did. And I had just taken, literally the day before I left in tour, I'd taken all my four wisdom teeth out. So my face, I looked like a chipmunk. I couldn't laugh because it would hurt. So I would go load in, trying not to speak because festivals are pretty dirty. So yeah. I'm trying not to get like
don't breathe more air than you need to.
Yeah, and then go to the bus and get like my frozen bottles of water and just put in my face. And people walk in the bus and I would just be sitting there with two like frozen bottles of water trying to get my
guy's kind of weird.
The new guy.
Yeah, so that was the first thing I did, and then I toured. My first big like U.S. tour was actually Hannah Montana.
Yes,
I did the Best of Both Worlds tour. And I haven't stopped since then, you know, until 2017 when I went, I don't want to be on the road anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame you. Like, cause I've had friends that have, I mean, been on tour who have toured with people and like, cause I mean, I'm sure there's this part of you that was like that 14-year-old self. That's like, I'm going to go tour the world with these rock bands and do all these great things. And I mean, it's also like the same parallels you find in like business travel in general.
Yeah.
People in college are like, oh, I'm going to go travel for work. We're going to be in New York. We're going to be in San Francisco. We're going to be in Chicago.
We're going to be in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Kansas.
Yeah.
So I feel like in similar ways, like my friends that wanted to travel for work, they're like, hey, I'm in a boardroom and like,
oh yeah,
outside of Chicago, Illinois, and I hate this. I mean, yeah. I'm sure it's the same way. You're like, oh, I didn't realize like this is a grind. I do not sleep. I don't really have time off. They're like, some of these people are assholes, and I don't.
Oh yeah, them. Yeah, you do, yeah. Well, but it's also very much a lifestyle. Like if that's not the thing that really resonates, it will chew you up and spit you out. Mm-hmm. You cannot go on tour and go like, oh, you know what? It's Sundays. I take Sundays off. I'm like, no, the band, there's a show. Get out of the bus. Yeah. And we've had people that have come as like, for family or whatever to try out. And they're like, oh, wait, again? We're doing this again? But we just did the same show yesterday. I'm like, yeah, it's a tour. Like
the schedule.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while.
And we get that a lot. Yeah. And so you sleep in a bus with, 10 to 11 other people. And, and I would come home. And when we met, like, I she thought I was joking, like that I had like a little luggage thing that they have in hotels in my room. And she walked in and was like, oh, you actually have a... I'm like, yeah, my luggage is always open. Yeah. Like I always, because I would just swap out clothes and just go like on tour.
Like a dresser. Like yeah. the little luggage rack with the suitcase open was basically...
That was part of my furniture, yeah.
The furniture,
yeah.
Just in and out. And I was like...
So yeah. I like the decor. I've got my bed. I've got my luggage rack.
Yeah. So
it's your own little Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
it's a lifestyle. Like, there are days where you're like, I've slept 3 hours. There's days where like everything goes wrong in a show and like building it is really hard and
tearing it down, loading it up again, over and over and over.
Over and over again, not sleeping there's a thing that they call submarine rides, which is when you have to get like across the country in a tour bus and you just drive for 12 hours and you're in a bus, right? And the tour buses are really nice usually, but other than the bunk area in the middle, there's a front lounge and the back lounge, and you're stuck there with 10 other people or whatever. And you do get like cabin fever. It's insane. Yeah.
The first couple of days, everyone's talking, getting to know each other. After a week, like, hey, I'm just going to put my AirPods back.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're good.
Exactly.
So you're traveling, doing all this. I mean, at what point did good old Salt Lake City, Utah come under the mat?
So I stopped touring. At one point, like I think my family genetics caught up and I went, okay, I've done it. I had my fun. I also wanted to design and I was always a crew chief. I was a tech and I was a good tech. It's not what I wanted to do. And I could see that unless I took sort of a drastic decision to basically everyone that called me go, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just designing from now on. Because I could take any tour in the world that I wanted. I didn't want to do that anymore. Yeah. And it was, so I saved enough money to go, I cannot work for 6 months and just continue living my life, which is weird because I was not used to living more than 4 weeks at a time in my house. Like budgeting food was a new thing for me. And I just did that for a while and I stopped touring. I became a designer, got hired by Lightswitch, who I work for now as a designer. And then when I met Randy.
How did you guys meet? What's the story behind that?
Oh, well, which version of the story?
No.
No,
the classy version or the real? No, I'm kidding.
I also love that that is a thing because like there's been people I've dated where it's like, all right, so we got the real story and we're telling grandma.
Yeah. We 100% have that. Yeah,
we definitely have that. We met on a job in Chicago. I was assisting the choreographer for a big corporate show, and Iggy is friends with the producers. And he just like came on site to say hi. I will tell you, when I tell everyone this, he walked into the arena with sunglasses on. Okay. And I remember standing on stage with the choreographer and I was like, who is this smug guy walking in the room with his sunglasses on? And
that's all we need to know. No.
That's it. No.
No, yeah, we met there and then we went out and
this is all while I was still living in LA at the time. So I'm in Chicago for a job. He happened to be in town, comes on site.
You were never dating another.
I wanted to date long distance.
Yeah, and
No
one wants to date long distance.
I was like, I'm looking for a relationship, long distance only.
And I didn't want to. I didn't want to date a dancer because I already dated a dancer, and did not end well.
I was gonna say, that much, you probably have a couple like tropes that you're very
similar. Yeah. So that was and then she ended up marrying a foreigner from Chicago, and I married a dancer from LA. So that was
great.
And then we got engaged and we had never lived together. And we're like, we should probably do this.
Let's just do this. We'll figure everything out after we get married.
After we get married.
But she wouldn't move to Chicago because it was freezing.
Fair.
And I didn't want to move to LA because it was LA. She's originally from Utah. So we're coming here a lot to visit family. And I have been here a million times doing shows at the Delta Center. Yeah. But, you know, the Delta Center, you park underground underneath a little drive-in. So you get out of your tour bus, walk right into the venue, do the show, go to bed. And then the next morning you wake up, you're in Phoenix or Vegas or whatever. So you don't, from the Delta Center, you don't really see the city.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it. So when we got here for some, I think I was like, oh, you guys have mountains here? I knew very little. So like, and I was like, oh, this is really pretty. And I live on Lake Michigan, you know, my condo was in the lake and it was great. So I was like, oh, I think the idea of having kind of more nature was appealing to me because Chicago is great. Lake Michigan is great, but it's just the lakes and the city's flat. Right. So
it's hard to get out of Chicago too, to go do stuff.
Yeah.
City's amazing. Chicago's incredible.
Yeah. So
in the winter and
not really the summer.
Nah. Yeah. But the fall. The fall is great. The fall is great. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how we ended up here. Yeah.
I'm from Orem.
Yeah. So let's go back to that. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Also, if you don't mind.
No, that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways,
for me. Yeah.
Pull that mic just a little bit closer so we get a little bit more
based
to me.
Yeah. If there we go. We'll clear it. Okay. Yeah. So let's go back in time to your beginnings. So born and raised Orem, Utah.
Born and raised Orem, Utah. Whoop whoop, Utah County.
Oh man, love that for you. I don't, but I do. But I don't. It's one of those things that gives you a good backstory and probably motivates you to do.
It really was. It was.
Right, I've tried to like LARP and Orem, but yeah.
No, because Utah County, obviously, for anybody that lives here, knows that Utah County and Salt Lake County are two different worlds.
Right.
And so when I was, I was like, I have to get out. I have to leave. I'm done with Utah. I don't want to live.
It's like so many people go through. Especially down there.
Yes, I feel like a lot of people go through the same roller coaster of, what am I doing? I hate Utah. I got to leave. And then we're like, wait a second. Utah's awesome.
Yeah.
And so when we decided to move back here, kind of jumping forward, I was like, hey, listen, I've actually never lived in Salt Lake City, but it's a city. It's cool. Nature.
It's a city. That doesn't use slogan.
I know.
Salt Lake City. It's a city.
The new tagline.
That's the new tagline. But I was like, listen, it's close to an international airport. It's brand new. We fly Delta. We're good. You know, so it was all these things I was trying to like lure him in. And that's how we.
Oh, because also we have a set of like needs. And one of them is we need a big, we fly 140,000 miles a year. We need a big international airport. We can't go to like So that was a big thing also.
No, I totally get that. And so, I mean, growing up in Utah, because I know like dance became very important to you. I mean, were you dancing, in your youth in high school and all of that time?
Oh, yeah. The whole time I had no life other than dance, which obviously I loved. But my mom was a gymnast, so she put me in gymnastics when I was 3, something like that. And I think they knew pretty quickly that they were like, oh, I I don't think she's going to make it in gymnastics.
Pivot.
Yeah, pivot immediately. So then I started dancing, you know, probably 4 or 5. I started really young and grew up doing that. I'm the oldest of 6, so it was a lot of chaos at the house, and dance was my, you know, dance was my
escape.
Dance was the escape. But
for you or for your parents?
For everyone. For everyone.
Yeah. Everybody.
So one less in the house. That was dancing.
Here, go dance.
There's only 5.
Yeah. Dance today? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you have dance every day. Yeah, yeah. I think you need to leave. But it was about 11 or 12, so 5th grade, somewhere around there, where my parents were like, okay, you've obviously got talent. Are we in or are we out? Because we got to decide right now. Are you going to go? Are you going to go? Or do you not want to do this? Like, what do you want to do? Because it's going to be...
Your mom's holding a BYU.
I know.
Form. Make a pick. Sign here.
I know, but I think my... I don't know. I don't really know exactly what they wanted. But I, at that moment, I was like, oh, no. Dance, for sure.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was, okay, realizing that I'm going to give up a social life. I'm going to give up family vacation. I'm going to give up a lot of things that other kids might get to do. And also, I just knew really young that... I was meant to do this. I was meant to do something. I don't know. I don't want to say more because I think that sounds, I lost an earring. We're on a podcast, but if it's being recorded. I just knew, like, I was like, okay, I think this is it. Like, I think this could be my thing. And it turned out
it was
to be. It was my thing.
I mean, it's always nice when the thing you want to do, you find out sooner than later. Because I have, like, so many friends right now who are going through the same, like, crisis. It's not like a midlife crisis, but it's more of like a...
Quarter-life crisis?
Well, it's different themes.
Yeah.
I would say more of like people like, I don't know what makes me happy, what I like to do, or what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I've been told everything. I've been told every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either not worked out the way everybody planned it, or I'm not happy and something needs to change. And it's like...
Yeah.
So I'm like so envious that you're like... 5th grade, like, send it. And right.
Well, and also, I will say it did not come without a lot of sacrifice, a lot of work, obviously. And also, I can't even say that what I thought was going to be is. Like, my life is completely different than what I thought.
Visualized.
Yeah, that what I thought, like, I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to be a dancer. What, honestly, someone please tell me what that means. I don't even think I know.
Honestly, those phrases alone, you could end up as a stripper.
Like, what does that even mean? You know, and so I did. I moved.
Anything.
Yeah, I didn't really know what that meant. I just had really good teachers and really good mentors and supportive family that were like, I don't know, here you go find out. You know, so when I was 17, I moved to New York and found out real quick. That wasn't the place.
What were you doing first in New York? Was it school or was it?
No. I was just auditioning. I was broke, living on my mentor's couch. At 6 months, she was like, are you going to move? Like, are you?
I need to sit down.
Yeah.
Are you going
anywhere anytime soon? But actually, while I was there, I will say one of my dream jobs, I wanted to dance for Radio City Christmas Spectacular.
Yeah.
I wanted to dance at Radio City. And it took me 3 years to book that job. Mind you, I know you can't see me. I'm 5'3", so don't even think for a second that I was a rocket. I was one of the ensemble dancers. And it took me 3 years to book this job. And after, I remember getting the call. I remember exactly where I was when they called and said, you booked the job. And I was like, holy shit. I called everyone. I was like, oh my God. So that was kind of the first big job that I was like, okay. This is working. But it's like one of those, you know, those pictures that it's like where you are and the goal and then the squiggly lines in between. It's just like, what the fuck's happening? You know, it's like that. This industry, like being a professional dancer for so long, this industry is very much like you go to a job interview every single day and you get rejected day after day after day after day after day. And then you might get a yes. And then you do the same thing over and over and over and over again for years.
Yeah.
Right. So you learn perseverance real quick.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how bad do you want to do this?
So you're in New York. Yeah. You get the job that you've always wanted to. Mm-hmm. It's starting to look like things are shaping out.
Yeah.
And then at what point were you like, all right, I'm out of New York, on to my next spot?
Well.
The couch. The couch is out.
Yeah. I will say I met someone who lived in Utah at the time of getting this job. I actually ended up moving back to Utah and I got married.
That'll do it.
I
come back into Utah County in your 20s and there's like five targets on.
Oh yeah. It's like, and listen, anybody that knows Utah, had lived in Utah, you know, like you get to a certain age and you get engaged and you marry the return missionary and that's just what you do. And you think, okay, this is what my parents want me to do. This is what everyone wants me to do. This is the right thing to do. This is happiness that, you know, but when you're 20, I look back and I'm like, how do you know? How do you know that that's what makes you happy? I don't know who I am.
Can't imagine.
I don't know how to be a wife. I don't know how to do this. And that, you know, for what it's worth, like I learned a lot of lessons. There we go. That's maybe what I'll say about that. But all in that same time is I auditioned for So You Think You Can Dance.
Yes.
About this same time. And I don't know what it is about the power of three, but it took me 3 years to get on that show as well. First year I went on, got cut the first producer round, didn't even make it past the very, very first round. Second round, I made it all the way to Vegas, like to the very end, got cut in Vegas. And then the third year, made it on the show, made it to the top five girls and went on tour and did the whole thing. So yeah, that was kind of the, you know, the next big thing in my dance career that really took another launch and, you know.
I mean, going through that experience, I mean, what was some of your favorite parts? I mean, either that happened behind the scenes or moments where you're like, this is happening, this is real, and are just like enjoying the moment as it happened.
Okay, I will never forget, because it's so encapsulated. Like you go into the studio, you have rehearsal, you go straight to the dance studio, you have rehearsal, you go straight to interviews, you go straight to the hotel, and you're just shuttled around. So you're not really seeing any of the outside world, really. Right. And to me, it was just like, okay, I'm just going to rehearsal. I'm basically doing a dance competition. And I was very used to that. And I will never, even when the live shows are recorded, you're only in an audience of, 100 or 200, however big the audience is. And it's cool. They're, you know, screaming your name. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is so cool. Like 100 people, like, go Randy, you know. And then I will never forget walking outside of the studio, because it's connected to the Grove right there in L.A. And you walk out, and it was like people in public knew who we were. And people were like asking for pictures. And I'm like, that was the first time I was like, oh my God, this is like a big deal. Like, this is really cool.
People know me.
But that whole experience, I mean, like I said, I feel like it really kicked off a trajectory that, again, I didn't ever see or know was possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, great experiences. Obviously, not great experiences. A lot of lessons. I'll say that. A lot of stress. A lot of getting to know yourself real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, very different worlds from being married and Mormon to being on reality TV show and becoming a face.
Yeah. And also, I will say, because this is back in 2009, season 5, so, you know, forever ago. Looking at the talent now, who's making it on the show, I'm like, how did I ever make that show? Like, honestly, how did I ever make that show? The odds of making that show are so slim. I mean, it's like winning the lottery.
You could go back.
I don't know. Maybe my 20-year-old self could. Right now I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, I love doing it. I love that that's a part of my history. I love that that's a story that I get to tell.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's that, what you were saying about like walking out of the studio. You're like, people know me. Like, this hasn't happened before. Oh my gosh, what's his name? The guy on Friends that just passed away from drowning. Oh my God.
Oh, Matthew Perry.
Oh, Matthew Perry. Oh, on Friends.
So yeah. I finished his audiobook, and there's a moment where everything's recorded for the, so they do the pilot. Everyone's like, this is great. Let's record the first season. First episode, first season's about to launch. They had just done like a press tour in Vegas. And the producer's like, hey, guys, you guys all need to go out tonight and do whatever the hell you want. Go be in public as much as you can, because after this, that will never be able to happen again. Mm. And all of them, like, he talked about it, like, they're like, what do you mean? Like, this is never. And then he's like, to that point, I was never able to go out and not be recognized as Matthew Perry. And
I mean, the same thing happens to me every time I step outside my door. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh, you know me. It's
like, no. No, it was just, it was kind of an experience of a lifetime type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, having that, I mean, again, having like that next step of that career that you wanted to have that happen.
Yeah.
Be successful, go so far, and then be able to go on tour and keep doing things that you love.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so funny that you guys both have these like similar experiences. We're like, oh, yeah, you're on tour, And then now she goes on tour, and you meet on tour doing different things. So, I mean, would you feel like your experiences being on tour and traveling were similar to Iggy's and just kind of like, I mean, it was fun and it was good, but definitely had a life where you're like, I want to move on to something else.
Yeah. I mean, when I went on tour, so after, So You Think, that was only a 2.5 month tour. And then I did another tour in Tokyo. And then I toured US with Derek and Julianne Hough here. But all of my tours were honestly a month, 2 months, really sporadic. Even when I went on with another show around the country, I was on and off tour for about 10 years.
That sounds nice.
He's like, this was an option.
Yeah, but
I did a 2-year tour one. What are you talking about? Month?
No. It's exactly what Iggy said. It's a lifestyle. It's a choice. It's definitely a choice. And also, people think that it's this glamorous life, which I love our life. I wouldn't give our life up for anything. And also, it comes with, I am tired. I'm tired all the time. I really am. Like, you have to prioritize your sleep. I'm in a different city almost every night. I'm in an airplane. I live in an airport. I'm in Ubers. I get Uber. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that lifestyle. And I can't imagine it any other way. Like, this is by design.
And well, it's not, and it always comes down to, like, you have to put in the work to get to where you want to be.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And so it's like, that's the work that each of you respectfully had to do. Because it's not like you could just step and be like, I just want to design shows without any experience.
No, of course. Yeah.
And it's not like you could choreograph everything you do without like, and here's my resume.
Yeah.
And I will say because we do both come from tour, and what we do now, the traveling that we do now, even though we're not on tour, it's on the road, and also it's in a completely different capacity, a different role, a different level of work that we're doing now. While it's still on the road, it's a lot different than like being on tour.
Yeah, being on a bus and a hotel every day, and it's a different monster. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
No, it sounds like a little bit more bearable than the previous version.
But the thing about touring is you get to do some experiences, which, I mean, you cannot do that any other way. You cannot see the inside of arenas, or like, I've been to rooftops of stadiums, and like, I've been inside, there's a massive indoor stadium in Russia, and I've been to the girders of it to like, just to some, because the trucks were late, so they're like, let's go to the roof, and we're like, oh, sure. Let's follow this Russian guy up to the roof of this building. This is big.
Go stand next to the edge. Sure.
Yes, but I mean, you get to do like the liberties and the stuff that comes with the job. It's incredible. It's just, there's a balance to it. And with that balance, it's like, but you're also, like, you're gone for so long. You're doing, there is that incredible balance of you get to see the world. You're also tired all the time, you know?
Isn't there a balance?
With everything,
there's balance if I was an accountant with 5 kids.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just a different kind of balance.
Yeah, you make those decisions of what you want, and you make it work.
Yeah.
Because you fill in the big parts with what you want to do, and then everything else kind of fills in.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I mean, if you were an accountant, there'd be different trials, there'd be different hard things. Like, there's always going to be hard things. There's always going to be things that are fun.
Yeah.
Things that are validating, no matter what your life is. But it's up to you to prioritize them, make sure you understand what's going on. Being in the driver's seat of your life instead of being in the passenger seat and waking up one day and not knowing.
I love driving.
Yes, I'm with you. I'm not a passive liver.
Yeah,
enjoyer of life.
Yeah,
I like making my decisions.
Yeah.
Some people are in the backseat, so it's even worse, you know. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't be in the backseat.
So you guys meet in Chicago. You guys start dating. Realize that both of you are like, hey, I don't know if I want to do this the same. Start moving to Salt Lake. I mean, how big of a shock was that for both of you? Both adjusting to being together.
Actually, it wasn't, because we moved here September of 2019. She was in Canada doing an eye show.
Rock the Rink.
I came here. We designed New Skin's big annual thing. But that was when we were moving in. So like, the house was still in boxes, and I would be here programming in the Delta Center every day. Go home, unpack for a few. I was sleeping on the floor for the first 4 days because there was no mattress. We had to buy a new mattress.
Yeah.
And then running back to keep. I had to run out of rehearsals to go pick up a mattress. Like, the mattress was like, I'm gonna say your door. I'm like, I'm going, and I'm running down. I'm running down First Avenue. You know? And then she got back home, and then like, I think like 2 weeks later, I went to Saudi Arabia for a month to do a show. So like, it. And then when we moved back in, it was COVID. So like, our beginning in Utah was crazy. which is also kind of good because a lot of our friends, we went to New York when COVID really kicked off, and a friend of mine owns a theater in Broadway, and she sent me a message going like, we just got shut down. Like the theaters, Broadway is shut down. So we were like, okay, this is serious. We got to leave. So we moved, we came back here, and we just like, we hiked, we saw Utah in a way that we don't get to see now. Well, all of our friends in New York are like, I'm stuck in my shoebox. And I'm like, I'm on top of a mountain. I gotta, you know. So it was really kind of a blessing in disguise of how much we got to see the state.
Yeah.
You know, paddleboarding and hiking.
Underneath the Delta Center.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, but moving, it was interesting because moving to Salt Lake, you know, it was more of a just, hey, should we move to Salt Lake? Okay, sure. All right. Let's go.
It was pretty easy.
And then, yeah, it was so easy. And we got to see this side. Like, again, I've never lived in Salt Lake City. So then when we moved here, I was like, oh, my God, this place is awesome. Like, I can't believe that I ever had this bad.
You villainized it.
I did.
You villainized it.
I did a little bit because I think I was traumatized a little bit. what's happening? And we found the people here really nice. We found the nature of everything, you know, really inspiring and a breath of fresh air and like a literal breath of fresh air. And
you were in LA. That's different. At least I had some nature in Chicago.
Yeah. So we immediately loved it and we're like, oh my gosh. And to this day, when people, because obviously we travel all over the world, people ask us where we live and we say Salt Lake City, Utah. And normally the first response is, on purpose? And we're like, yes, have you been? And they're like, no. And I'm like, please come. I still think it's like the best kept secret in the nation.
It's just a weird for entertainment. Like nobody is in, entertainment doesn't really live here.
Yeah.
It's like New York, Chicago, LA, right, Atlanta.
Yeah.
So like we are the only, one of the few people, obviously there's others, but I'm like, it's not a normal answer in like the world of entertainment.
Totally.
Yes.
And it's so funny too, because like you tell people, they're like, and they, again, everybody has this like idea of what it's like. Like, oh, how many moms do you have?
Yeah.
It's the same four jokes in a row. Cool. Yeah.
I get it. But, and it is funny because like the amount of people that I've met who, so like for context, when I was in college at the U, I was one of the first like Lyft drivers ever in Salt Lake.
Oh, wow.
And so that was the first time I ever like just got unfettered access to just talk to people about whatever. And so there are so many times I'd be like, oh, like, what, like, are you from here? He's like, yeah, I'm just headed to the airport. I'm like, oh, like, where are you from? He's like, oh, I was from Indiana, came here for a bachelor party and ended up never leaving.
Yeah.
And that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'd like all of a sudden just, and then like, so that happened. And then around that same time, I mean, this is after my mission. So I was naturally just like more social and just like programmed to talk to
anybody
that would talk to me. Probably where my problems of talking to anybody about anything has started. But, and then, I mean, when I would go skiing, because I was a big skier in college, because, I mean, going to the U, you're right there, 30 minutes, you're on a lift, go ski till 4, come back, work, do homework, whatever, you're done.
Right.
And so I'd always just talk to people. I'd be like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, wait, I haven't had someone on a chairlift with me in over 2 weeks that said they're from Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like, because like as a kid, you just assume that they're here next to me, so they're obviously from here. And then, I mean, but also, I mean, sure, you can attest to this, Randy. It's like, you have so many people that are from here. They don't like being here, whether it's just trying to be like counterculture or whatever, or truly not. And then they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody leaves. And so many people leave without the intention of coming back.
Yeah.
Then it's also especially like, I mean, COVID was a big influencer of this as well, where people are like, oh, if I'm in New York or LA or whatever, and I'm paying $3,000 for rent, like,
I'm going home. Yeah.
And then all these people, I mean,
we have so many friends.
So many of my friends that did it, same thing, moved here, and they're like, Oh wait,
it's actually really
cool. Wait a minute. Cool. And I can do my job from here now too?
Yeah.
How much are I just? Ooh.
I know. Yeah, it was kind of a fluke thing. Obviously, COVID was a fluke, but that we moved here in the fall of 2019. And then when everything hit, it was like, okay, like Iggy said, I this could be a nice reset for us to take a second. I mean, we dated long distance. Even after we got married, we were long distance. You know, it was just, we spent a lot of time apart.
So we used to, and this is real, we used to have dates in airports because we were like, oh, I'm in Atlanta airport too. Oh, what terminal are you in?
And we let's go to the room.
We meet at that one, have lunch, and then go on our own separate flight.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah, it's cute. So weird.
So weird, yeah.
Yeah. Off to work.
Travel safe.
Yeah, travel safe.
You guys know each other? Yeah. Right. You guys know each other?
Like sometimes. Depends on the day.
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
No, it's so, I mean, so now, obviously, you went through COVID where everything got shut down for your respective worlds. Mm-hmm. Things have started coming back to life. But, I mean, from then and now? I mean, what does life look like for you guys? I mean, were you traveling? What kind of shows were you doing?
Yeah. COVID was weird. Obviously, we both mostly work in live entertainment, and we both mostly work in really big shows.
Got it.
So that was kind of one of the, you know, oh, you want to put 60,000 people together in a stadium, but you forget it. Like COVID, that was like, you know.
Yeah,
no. So we did a bunch of like hybrid shows and virtual stuff. But yeah, COVID, I mean, everything shut down. We ended up actually, of all things, because we cannot stop for some reason, we opened a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym during COVID up in Park City, which still exists.
Was that something you've always been in, or
I've been jiu-jitsu for quite a while? Okay. And then during COVID, we're like, we're looking about like, do we buy a business? What do we do? And we ended up buying opening a jiu-jitsu gym. So that was interesting. It was our first time actually opening a store of any kind,
because we both worked
brick and mortar,
thing. And then COVID, after COVID, entertainment came back with like a fury. It was not, I mean, overnight, it was just insane. So we sold the business because we couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And now we haven't stopped since then.
Yeah. It was insane. Like, so I started my production company in 2014.
Okay.
Kind of out of necessity and that kind of thing. And I will tell you real quick, when we first met, he asked me what I do. And I said, I'm a producer. I work in live entertainment and I'm a producer. And he goes, sure you are. And I'm like, no, I'm okay, sure, whatever.
Every dancer that I meet, like historically, it's like, I'm also a photographer and a bartender and a director and a producer and stuff. You're like, well, but what do you, you know? But I think it's the same thing for you, because I was like, I'm a lighting designer and everything. She met.
Okay, sure you are. Until we found out that each other was actually like legit.
Yeah, she came to see me in Chicago, and like we're gonna go do one of my, you know, quote unquote shows, and it was like Def Leppard at Wrigley
Field. I was like,
oh yeah, she do this. I'm like, you know, this is what I do for
like living. I got your tickets to Wrigley Field.
Yeah. No, I'm not joking. I'll tell you really quick. We walked in on field level, like obviously in the VIP, like the back, you know, stage entrance, and you walk in. It's golden hour at Wrigley Field, and Journey is playing Don't Stop Believin'. And I walked in, I was like, what is this movie that I'm in right now? This is so cool. And so I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're legit.
Light number 4.
I know. He really did.
It's a different life. But yeah.
Yeah. So kind of going back to COVID, we all of a sudden, like you said, everything completely shut down. And then all of a sudden it was not shut down. It came back with a fury. And it was like, everyone in the world, I think, was just scrambling, trying to figure out like, how do we do this? What's working? What's not working? How do we stay within the regulations of COVID and health and people together and traveling and testing? And it was just madness. It was madness. Like, was that 22?
22 was crazy. End of 21 was crazy.
It was insane. But now I feel
crazy.
I feel it's not, you know, listen, I'm very grateful that we're both very booked with a lot of work. And also, I think it's much more manageable now. It doesn't feel like a tornado crazy. It feels... No, it's not.
Yeah, I got it. He's like, I got
it. No. Because it's just, it's a little bit more manageable staying on top of schedules and staying organized and keeping our joint calendar up to date.
I can imagine.
If it doesn't go on the calendar, we don't do it.
If it doesn't happen, if it's not on the calendar, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Like, phone call. If it's not on the
calendar, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So I know that, I mean, you both have your dance choreography, but then also your skating choreography. I mean, anything, I mean, big coming up with like, as
well, we just got back from
Worlds. We just came back from Montreal, which is Worlds Skating Championship, which is like the kind of the last end of the season. But I started working with, I'm not a skater for anybody. I'm not an ice skater. I did a show in Tokyo with ice skaters, with Charlie White and Meryl Davis and Christy Yamaguchi and Daisuke and Cheryl Burke from Dance with the Stars. So I ended up meeting these skaters, kind of working with them. And that turned into this web of work that I never knew was even possible. And this is, you know, 7 years ago, something like that. And so now I do dance and movement choreography for ice skaters, for like Olympic level ice skaters. And most recently, just 2 weeks ago, we launched, I have now an online on-demand dance and movement instruction curated for ice skaters.
There you go.
So the app is out, the website is out. And again, like that's kind of what I'm talking about, this life that you think you're going to live. I never could have even imagined. Who knew that I was going to work with ice skaters? I'm not even an ice skater.
Yeah.
And also I feel like these skill sets that I have learned throughout my entire life have led to being able to own businesses and work the way that we do and be on site and you know how to act, know what to say, know what to do, know how to feel, know how to communicate. You just learn this skill set via dance, via travel, via business, via relationship and friendships. And here we are now. You know, I work with every discipline in skating, synchro, single, pair, ice dance. And it's taken over my life in the best way.
I know. And so, to your point of like the line that goes up, down, around,
yeah,
circles back around.
Yeah.
It's so funny because like if you go back to your fifth grade self when they're like, I'm in dancing. And if you could just show up then and be like, hey, by the way. Yeah. You're choreographing ice skating. And you're like, wait, what that? Wait, hold it, come back here. Right. I don't understand. How did this happen?
Wait, I'm not an ice skater.
Well, but it's also so funny how that worked. Because like my life, like I've always had a perspective on like my own like professional life. And it's kind of trickled into other things as I like explore my creative side and like all these other things. It's I think it's a lot of just like this narrowing pendulum swing. Like I went to school and I was like, I'm going to be an architect. Nope, not enough jobs, not my kind of creativity. Let's go be a civil engineer. They need something to help them fall down. Like, I don't want to be in a back room with a bunch of other engineers. Screw this.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I liked chemistry, pre-pharmacy. I don't know. And like, until business, finance. And now it's like, okay, I'm really close now. And like, but again, I'm like, I'm not so focused on this end journey that I'm not going to have any variance towards it.
Exactly.
Because even the things I'm doing now didn't exist when I was trying to make the decisions on what I like, quote, want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think there's like that huge part of, and especially for you, like you could have had people who are like, hey, like if you thought about ice skate, you're like, I've never done this. I don't like this. Dance purist. Yeah. Get out of my face.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, granted, everything probably would have worked out, but it's so interesting how if you're flexible and like open-minded, these paths can open their ways for you in ways you never thought would happen. Yeah.
And I actually say this quite often, is I'll say yes to almost anything once. I really will. Like food, experience, job, meeting someone, almost always I'll say yes once.
Yep.
And then I'll see how I feel about it. And it was one of those things where I started working with skaters and I'm like, I'll go on one date with you, Iggy. I said yes.
It's like, oh, you're coming to Wrigley Field.
And then I was like, okay. No, but so that was kind of the same thing working with skaters. I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. And then I went home and I was like, what the fuck? Oh God. Oh my gosh. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? Oh yeah. Still to this day. I still don't skate. You know, but it was just one of those things where you say yes to, and then here we are 7 years later to the most incredible experiences and quote unquote work.
Yeah.
Like, this is my work. And I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. I love it.
It's a good thing to have. I mean, Iggy, what about for you? I mean, what kind of stuff are you working on or been working on recently?
No, but I think a lot of that ties in because obviously.
My IT department?
Yeah, I'm the IT department.
Honey, can't find the right show again.
I know.
No, but a lot of that. So obviously when we did this online studio, like all that footage is filmed, right? So it's basically a Netflix for dance and movement coaching. So we started filming and I was like, well, I've always sort of, you know, within what we do, we're in the periphery of video a lot. So we design a lot of content and we design LED screens and sets and stuff like that. But I've never edited. I always sort of started, but then I never have anything to apply it to. So when we started doing this, we're like, oh, we need to edit all of this content. We also need to edit like trailers and stuff. So I started working on learning editing. And now, weirdly enough, we are doing El Divo's 20th anniversary tour, which starts soon. So within El Divo, he had to create a ton of content. The first year, they have a huge LED screen for a long time. So I'm now home. I've been able to apply all of that stuff to edit all this content. And now for the next volume of Studio Strong, we have a whole new workflow because now I'm much more familiar with what we need to film and how we need to film it. So then I can. Yeah. So now we're gonna take everything in house and edit it. And I would have never. I mean, I've started and stopped this editing thing year and year and year after year, and now I finally have something to adapt it. And now I'm using it like heavily. Like I'm on DaVinci every day doing content. So that stuff is all. I think being adaptable is such a huge thing, and I think entertainment, especially live entertainment, you have to. Like, there's just no, you know, every day is different. So
yeah, especially being flexible to the point where, I mean, you started your career this curious 14-year-old being like, what does this button do?
Yeah.
Oh, does this do this? What does this knob do? Can I turn it? Cool. And then then it gets to the point like, okay, I want to go study this. I want to go do that. I want to go do this. Where, I mean, on-demand entertainment, I mean, YouTube, the way we know it, wasn't even anything.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Set back then. And so now to your point of like, oh, she wants to launch this online studio. I'm going to learn this. I've never had a reason to learn how to edit anything. Because no one's ever been like, I'm going to learn how to edit video for the sake of editing video.
It's hot.
Tell you have something.
To post on Instagram. No one's going to put that kind of time into.
No. And so like mine in the same vein, like it's so fun now because I remember when I first started, like, again, like I had to understand audio engineering. What hardware do I need? How do I edit this? How do I make this sound good? Like, and I mean, again, it's like this continuing learning. And then like, but that's trickled into, okay, now I need to edit video for YouTube.
Yeah.
Now I need to understand and build a website. Now I have to find out how to SEO optimize this website.
Right.
Yes, I still have to be having outreach and scheduling guests and recording episodes and make sure like, and so it's like all of these things you never thought you would, like I was talking to a friend I hadn't seen in like 10 years. He's like, so what are you up to? I was like, oh, you know, I have my day job doing like data analytics, working in tech. And then I have this podcast. He's like, podcast?
Yeah.
Have you like always done it? I'm like, no. He's like, well, did you ever like want to do a podcast? I'm like, not really. Like it just kind of came and there's an idea and it's fun. So we keep doing it. And then I meet really cool people. Like, so it's just like, it just matches so many of my personal values that like, as long as you're being true to yourself, what makes you happy keeps you, I mean, mentally, emotionally, I mean, spiritually, physically charged.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Let's do this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
But it's when, like, I mean, I even feel that. I mean, if there's people from work who will hear this, we'll probably edit this out anyway. But like with work, I'm like, I'm so jaded by this. I'm so sick of corporate America. It's not for myself. But then I'm like, let's go work on the podcast. Like that's interesting and nice stuff. I'm sure it's the same way where like, even if it wasn't what each of you had individually thought where you would be or what that would look like, it's exactly what you want now. No matter what that person 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago would say.
Yeah, but I think we both like to learn.
Yeah.
Like so one of the biggest things is being able to continuously be okay with the idea of that you don't know a thing. And either go, okay, I'm obviously not gonna suddenly get into like for a brief second when I stopped touring and I was like desperate to do a thing, I started to try to learn coding. And I think it took me like 3 days to go, I do not speak this language. I don't think that way. Because my mind is all like, how do we combine the artistic side with the technology side? And I cannot just think purely inside of technology. It's just, it didn't work that way. And I have all of my programmers that do shows for me. Like they are, that's who they are. They code. But the idea of always going like, oh, I don't know the thing. I don't want to learn the thing. This is something I'm going to pass on. Or I don't know the thing. I want to know the thing. And dedicating what is, you may now will say probably, inordinate amount of time to learning the thing.
Yeah.
But if you don't, I think if you don't do that continuously, you just atrophy.
Yeah. Well, it's like there's two traits when paired together are one of the most successful and motivating things. It's curiosity and determination.
Yeah.
And so if you're curious, like, oh, what is this thing? Determine, like, I'm going to figure this out. Like,
yeah.
You can overcome anything. And especially in today's world, like, I always have a shout out my mom, love her, but she'll always be like, how do I do this? Like, she texted me the other day. She's like, how do I listen to your podcast? I know you put it on my screen here. I can't find it. I'm like, hey, mom, just like a general rule, anything you're questioning, just put a how-to before that and put that into Google. And it'll figure it out, I promise. She's like, wait, really? I'm like, yes.
So you know when you get the call and your mom's like, okay, I'm trying to attach. And you're like, stop there.
Yeah, no. We've put TeamViewer into everyone's computers. Because I'm like, I'll just TeamViewer and I'll either show you or I'll just do it for you. Yeah, it's just
give me access. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, I just can't.
But I also feel, I'm like, oh my God, what's the thing going to be when I'm my parents' age that my kids are like, oh, mom. What do you, how do you know, not like, or how do you not know how to use AI robot that takes your coffee or something, you know?
Oh, you screwed up the hologram again.
I used to do this on an application on my phone.
You have to use your fingers.
You hold it?
You hold
the phone?
The robot just knows when I need coffee and
what I'm awake. I know. It's great. The
perfect temperature.
The chip in my head, yeah.
The chip in my head.
Yeah. Like I have one of those? Yeah. Yeah, of course. No, but it's been a kind of a bananas year because it's been, you launched your studio, the ice skating thing, which I am now sort of a part of.
Yeah.
You know, she took me to the nationals and I'm a live grenade, right? Because I'm not easily impressed by people because I've done big shows with people. Yeah, I've seen the people. So I just go and I'm very, you know, outwardly critical of things and it works.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, and maybe this more on a foundational level is why we work, is... Sure, Iggy's not a skater.
Correct. Neither are you.
She can skate. If I step on the ice, I will crack my head open.
But here's what we started doing, and a lot of skaters have started coming to us more as like a couple to help them is be more of a producer of your program for your year. And like, what is the music? What's the feeling? What's the costume? What's the choreography? What's the vibe? What's the, what are you saying? What, like what, it's more of a produced program instead of a ballad with a dress and rhinestones and skate, skate, skate. Right. Because I just don't think that that's serving anybody anymore. And so that's why I kind of brought Iggy in because he's so creative in the way that he can define things and explain the human element of what we're watching. And but it's the same, right? It, whether it's skating or for Carol on a world tour or El Divo or, you know, over in the Middle East, like whatever, it all comes down to this human element of what am I feeling when I'm here, right? And how do we combine, like what Yigi said, the artistry and the technology, and yes, of course, a budget, and create this feeling that people will not forget, right? And so that can be applied, and that's being creative with a budget, with ice skaters, with a show, with the Olympics coming to Salt Lake. It's building a restaurant, making a podcast. It's all creative.
Yeah.
Like we're all, like Rick Rubin says, we're all creative.
Don't get me started on Rick.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've read or listened to The Creative Act.
Mm-hmm.
So that's now like my daily meditation. I just throw on 10 minutes and
let it rip. Yeah.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's what makes, because, and people do ask us all the time, like, oh, how can you work with your husband? Like, I could never work with my husband. We have a 4-hour rule. After 4 hours, it's like, I got to take a walk. Like, we can't be around each other for more than 4 hours. But I feel like that about around most people. I just need alone time. But it is that, how do we combine our strengths and produce experiences and make clients, whether that's a skater or a CEO or a president, I don't know, happy, you know, fulfilled.
And it's nice that you... Because, I mean, it's nice when I've been in relationships in the past where it's like, hey, we have some sort of common understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially like, I mean, work's the easiest one because that's the thing that takes most of our, I mean, time away from each other. And so be able to come back and be like, oh my gosh, you'll never believe what happened at work today. It's like, oh, I totally understand because the same thing happened to me last week.
Yeah.
And so I imagine with you both, like being on that same sort of creativity side, on the same side of entertainment, the same side of really trying to put together something in like a harmonious way, like you were talking about, Randy. I'm sure it's nice to have someone to your point, probably how, I mean, Iggy, you got brought in. It's like, hey, I have a question about something. Like, I want your point of view. And the next, you know, he's sitting next to you and you guys are both working on it together. And
I'm definitely the emotional one. And Iggy is highly pragmatic.
He gets it from his dad.
Yes. Yeah. And so that definitely comes into, I think, like, if I get my feelings hurt or something, I'm like, can you believe that? He's like,
yes, I can.
I know. And then he's like, write this and say this and be done with it. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's so funny, right? Because I'm also like in our work roles, it's reversed. Like you're technically a producer and I'm technically a designer.
Yeah.
So everybody would expect me to be, and I am very right brain, but I'm also, all of my emotional output is through my shows, is through like creative and lighting and stuff like that. So, but on the day-to-day business thing, and I will say, because I make this separation very often, is I'm a designer, I'm not an artist. I have an artistic side, but I, as a designer, I have to have a foot in the practical iteration of like, do we need to build the show every day? We need to fit it in X amount of planes. We need to fit it in X amount of budget. So I can't just go like, oh, it's all going to be great and we'll make it out of clouds. And I don't have even a want to. I cannot turn that part of my brain off. So what's funny when they meet us, it's kind of the opposite. Like personality-wise, I am very much the drier, pragmatic guy, but my output is always super emotional, which is for her. So yeah,
it's the complete opposite.
Her emails are the you know, with this work, these are the schedules and the budgets and we should do this and I schedule the time and we have the dancers. You know, but in person, she's much more emotional.
But even on site, though, when shit needs to get done, I'm very much my...
Red Lip Randy.
Red Lip Randy. That's what my people call me. Red Lip Randy. When the red lip is on, that means, like, it means business. Like, we're running a company. You know, this is business. And then, yes, but in person, I'm
She's nicer.
I'm nicer.
It's good to have that, like, balance between you.
Yeah.
And being like, yeah, you know, I know when things need to get done, but I also know when it's when I'm in
that field. It's like the don't mistake my kindness for
weakness.
Weakness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in everybody needs to know when to be an asshole.
Yeah.
For example, I was on this golf trip with some friends this weekend. We planned for like 4 months. And so we were getting lunch and there's 8 of us, like $150. We're like, all right, okay, scramble 4v4 on these teams. Whoever wins has to pay for lunch. And the person put on the cards, like, he was the wild card invite. Like,
yeah.
Nathan, he was him. We love him. He's great. He's just like, if for people who knew all of us, if we were to lay out the names, be like, which one feels the less like it belongs? Most people pick him.
Yeah.
So he put his card down because it was one of those like, hey, we need to get out of here quick. They're like, okay, then it needs to be on one check. So anyway, so that check happens. And then like we ended up winning and we're like, Colson, you need to get the money. Like, this is a principal thing. He's like, no, I don't mind. Thanks for having me. Like, no. I know you're fine. Like, I know you will pay for it. I know you make this is fine. But like,
this was the deal.
This is time to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, people owe you money.
Yeah.
We agreed to this.
Yeah.
Go get your money.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I just don't want to, like, I know you don't want to rustle any feathers.
You know.
You don't want
to confrontation.
I was like, here's a good way. And like, but at the same time, like, if someone's in my face or like saying something enough, like, I'm a pretty nice person, but I'm also like, there's a threshold. If you cross me, like, you will probably not cross it again because I don't let people cross a certain threshold.
Yeah, but think a little bit about like how I say things. And I know I come off sometimes like a bit acerbic about it, but I've done this for a very long time and I have a track record that I would say is pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. In what I do. So I don't say things without going like I've put in my considerable experience behind these words. So sure, I'm very to the point. I am half German after all. Right. But and the other half is Italian and the rest of it is Argentinian. So imagine that. But it's if I tell you like
lots of strong.
Yeah,
I know.
But we go like, no, that lighting doesn't look good. I'm happy to defend it and tell you why, but I'm not going to go like, well, it would be great. Maybe next time, should we think? I'm like, why am I going to do that? That doesn't help me. It doesn't help the client. Doesn't help the people asking me the question. I'm not going in and going like, this is all terrible. You guys suck. That's just being mean.
Right.
But I'm just very direct to like, hey, if you ask me for an opinion, I'm going to give it to you in a way that is actually conducive to it works.
And like, it's, so one of my things I believe, and this is probably more professional, but kind of applies everywhere is like, don't be a bobblehead. Like if someone comes to you for an opinion, like, let's say on Nikki, they're like, hey, you know, I really don't like how warm these colors are. I don't know. I don't like the time. You're like, well, I disagree because color theory says this and like the timing of this and the emotions of this song feels this. And so like, this is kind of how I'm feeling. So I disagree with you. And they're like, oh, now that you put it that way, I agree. Because it's easy to be the bobblehead, be like, whatever you want, you
get
like brainless, just of course.
Yeah.
But they hire you to be an expert. They hire you to be professional, not to be like, I mean, a rubber ball that
they say
going to come back to them.
Well, and I think part of it is, you know, when we do these big shows, obviously like the main goal for us is to support whatever's happening on stage. And that starts with, you know, whoever's name is in the end on the poster. Right, whether it's Carol G or whoever, like it's their show, it's their name. They're the ones that are literally putting themselves in front of 60,000 people every night. So we have to be very conscious of it. I want to be very conscious of course, like whatever you say goes. Like, and sometimes when I go like, well, that's a weird decision. But also when you get to my level of shows, you don't hire me without knowing that it's going to come with expertise, that it's not going to come like with my own sort of quote unquote style. I'm not going to hijack your show, but it's like, if you just wanted me to press the buttons, then just here, I'll leave you my programmer and you tell me what to do. Yeah. Right. But
Chinook remains the same though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm still taking my cut.
No. But I think most artists understand that there is a relationship to this where it's you're, what I understand about what the show looks like is different from, because I'm in the audience looking out, than your experience, you know, from the stage out, or then watching it on Instagram, because we get that a lot. It's like, oh, I saw a video. I'm like, yeah, but that video isn't the show. That video is part of the show.
Yes.
But I also think that comes down to building trust with your client, because especially when it's a new client, you know, you obviously have to work harder to be like, listen, you hired me for a reason. Please let me do my job. And I'll do what you want. And also, like what Iggy said, it's going to come with expertise of here's why I think that you shouldn't do this. In the end, I'm going to do whatever you want. And also, I'm just letting you know that that's my opinion. But like doTERRA, I've done doTERRA's shows, their entertainment for what, 6 years, 7 years? And I feel like I have the most amazing, trusting relationship with them where it's kind of to the point now where they're like, hey, this is the theme. What do you think? And then we go build an entertainment pitch. And I think this. Okay, looks great. Oh, okay. Wow.
No notes?
No notes. All right. Nothing? Cool. No notes. Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. And it allows us to really do our jobs. Because again, when you get with new clients and it's like, well, and they're like, okay, I'm really trying to do my job. This is why you hired me. And it can feel maybe stifling.
Yeah.
You can't design by committee. It's really hard to design by committee.
With controlling energy never ends.
It ends up, honestly, you kind of have to be like, listen, this is a waste of money to hire me because you're not using me to my fullest capability. This is what I'm capable of. Please let me show you what I'm capable of. This is why you hired me. And 99% of the time it turns out to be like, oh my God, thank you so much for being honest with me. You know, now I trust you type of relationship. And in the end, I think you can agree in any profession or industry that relationship is the most important at the end of the day, your relationship, your connection with clients or friends or colleagues or whatever.
Yeah. Something people go around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So outside of dance, choreography, production, jujitsu, what do you guys like to do to spend your time, or what keeps you here?
That's 24 hours a day.
Literally just discussed.
I love that you're also in your like jujitsu uniform right now. I respect that.
Oh, that's we love Japan. We're big Japanophiles. I lived there for a bit. We were just there in November, so like we have a lot of Japanese prints in our house and stuff. And yeah, stuff. Yeah. So it's very dear to us.
When we're home, we restore at home. That's what we do on our free time.
We go to caves and
we do.
No, we spend a lot of time when we can. We go outdoors quite a bit. We have a canam and stuff like that. So we go out to Seven Utes and stuff.
We're getting out. We're getting out this weekend.
Well, you are. I'm going to be in Vegas.
Yeah, he gets to attend part of it. But we are going to Mesquite, taking the side by side. Going to go be outside and just that's it. Be outside. A lot of yoga and a lot of just spending time at home, kind of doing nothing. It's nice.
Well, it starts like that. It never ends doing nothing. We always end up.
Yeah. When I say nothing, I mean like working.
Oh yeah.
But at home.
Yeah. Just the scenery changes. We just see it.
No, I also think, we love hosting little dinner parties at home. That's
my favorite.
Yeah. It's.
We have a great kitchen. We use it twice a year. It's great. Yeah. Dust it off, you know.
We have this one dinner that we cook and it has really great wine and specialty cocktails that, you know.
Yeah, people come over. It's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. We love just having good conversation and, you know.
And that's so I was trying to explain this to my therapist when we were first starting together. I was like, you know, like, you know, when you have like people around a table and like usually a bottle of wine, it's just like good conversation, friendship, like, tabling. I was like, excuse me? She's like, what? Tabling.
Oh,
with
like,
the thing.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, just like sitting around talking, good conversation. Don't want it to end. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, noted. Got
You're
it.
Like,
same thing.
Yes. I love that. Tabling.
Yeah. Tabling's my favorite.
No, but you know.
But I think it's, well, I mean, I don't know how you were raised, but in Argentina, that's super normal. Like we start, our dinners start at like 8, 9 o'clock at night. Right. And then they go to like, our restaurants don't open until 8 p.m. Yeah. And then you just sit there for like our dinners take 3 hours. We sit there with wine and we talk and like it's a very Italian. We have a big Italian part of Argentina, so like a lot of our food culture comes from that.
Yeah.
So the transactional eating in the U.S. is really still to this day very shocking to me.
That's what I was gonna say when we went to Argentina. I was like the first time I went there in 2018, met his family. We sat down at dinner at 9 p.m. It lasted 3 hours. It was amazing because I was like a little lost in translation because I don't speak Spanish, but we're just sitting there drinking wine and talking and laughing and having a good time. And it lasted, you know, forever. And then when we got back to the U.S., I guess I just never realized it's like you go in, you eat, you pay the check, and the servers are just trying to get you in and out. And you're like,
it's awful.
And so to the point where I will not order all the food at once. I refuse to order the entire dinner at once. Yeah, no. And even.
I want to time my
own meal. And we do. We just sit there and we drink wine and talk and laugh. And it's more of an experience rather than in and out and pay the check and get.
Seriously. Go, go, go. How fast can you do this?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh God, like slow down.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah. Well, that was one thing I was talking to with Mateo Sonia, who started Mateo. Oh. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it was such a culture shock.
Which we love the restaurant.
Yes, we love. We just went. We just went. Yeah.
And I need to go to his Thursday like wine pairing dinners.
Oh.
But to be honest, perfect.
You don't know about that, but now we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, every Tuesday they have, I think it's like 100. Like 5-course meal and then like a $75 for like wine pairing.
Going tomorrow.
I know. What are we doing? How should we go?
Congrats coming down.
I know a guy, but he was the one who's like, because he came to the U to. I mean, he was a professional swimmer, barely missed out on the Olympics. Moved here to go, like, get a scholarship and get education. He's like, it was weird. Like people just ate in their bed and like ate on their couch. And he's like, I didn't understand. He's like, because for me, it's like if we bring family together, we talk, we converse, we do all these things. And he's like, and like to be honest, like that is a big part of, I mean, American culture, but also Utah culture. Like food in Utah until recently has been a very like,
yeah.
I guess keeping on the same.
We can have an entire podcast about how we feel about food.
Oh, that's the next podcast. But then it's like, but it's like this whole, oh, I need to get food. I need to do this. We need to go and do that. And it's like, no, like, hey. Chill, like
just chill.
Like,
yeah,
we love that it's starting to change. We love that it's starting to get, because obviously for us is not, it's harder for most, but we travel. We literally travel around the world for a living. Like if we're not traveling, we're not working. So we get to experience a lot of different culture around the world. So it's really bizarre to come back to here, and Utah's especially strange because it's a country. It's a city that has so much. You know, there's so many people that have come here through missions or whatever. Yeah. And you go like, how is this not more substantial? Yeah. Like, how is this not more interesting? And it's starting to get to that point where the service quality is going up and the food quality is going up. And Mateo's, I think, one of the greatest examples. The service was amazing. The food is incredible. And I think
I didn't feel like I was in an Instagram photo shoot.
Yeah, which we all get a lot. Yeah. There were no sparklers.
There were no sparklers. It was good food and good service.
Yeah.
And good
atmosphere. And it's that simple. Like it's that simple. It's like I don't
need my meal to come in with a sparkler.
I don't need the gimmicks. Just
I don't need gimmicks.
It's connection.
I don't want fluorescent lighting like shooting me in the eye. You know, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, going to things with me is hard because half of my world is live entertainment, so shows and movies are really tough. But then the other half of what Lightswitch does is architectural design. So going to restaurants is also hard because I start criticizing the restaurant. Like,
don't like what they did here.
We're hypercritical.
But,
yeah.
But it's also good. Like, it's even the first thing we kind of started talking about is like, it's good to be opinionated. It's good to have opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's also hard because once you do have strong opinions, mm-hmm. it's not like you can be like, okay, I liked going to Mateo, but it's time to go to Olive Garden. I can't do this anymore. Yeah. Like, that doesn't happen. It is getting better here. I feel like during the pandemic, there's a lot of restaurants went out of business that should have gone out of business. And now they're starting to get replaced with better things. But the biggest thing is just like just population and the like dynamics and everything has changed where, I mean, only like 4 or 5 years ago is the first time with the LDS population being less than 50% in Salt Lake ever.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people with a lot of money moving here who want to be able to go out to a nice restaurant, mm-hmm. be able to go to and have these experiences that are so common in LA and Chicago and New York that you don't have to go try to fight to find. And then now it's like, oh, like, okay, it's starting.
It's getting there.
See things.
It is getting there. I still feel like we'll go to like, for some context, we just went to Philadelphia, went to this incredible like bar restaurant. And I feel like I say this all the time. We go into places and I'm like, why isn't this in Utah? Why isn't this type of place in Utah? Where can we get this in Salt Lake? Because I do feel like there is a large and growing population that wants these experiences. Yeah. It's just not, it's kind of missing the mark.
So we've talked about like, you know, neither one of us wants to open a restaurant. My mom was a chef, mm-hmm. you know, retired, but so we've owned some restaurants with my mom. It's an awful grind. I don't know the numbers for that. I don't want to know the numbers for that. It's something I think we are really good at building experiences. And what's one of the things is like when people go to restaurants, I'm like, yeah, no matter what, it's still an experience.
Absolutely.
But we've always thought about like, well, we should design a restaurant. We should design an experience. And we have like a never ending list of what it should look like.
We've got Japanese restaurant. We got the bar. We got the.
We go to these places and we're like, this is not, you know, one of the things that I talk about this a lot with, you know, with clients and stuff, like design isn't, because obviously I do enormous shows which have a lot of budget, and we get like, you know, the manufacturers call me, go like, have a new light, try this out, have a new product. That is the top of the food chain in that respect, but that doesn't mean that that's the only things we do. And a lot of design is just pick the right things for the right environment. So a good restaurant doesn't have to be incredibly expensive to build. It's just like within these three parameters, and let's just have a thing we call pragmatic design. So our logo is three circles, and one circle is logistics, one circle is financial, I think one circle is creative. And it's those three circles, the more they overlap, the better the experience is. But if you just push too much, you know, and those circles can change depending on, well, for us it's those three, because that's what we do in entertainment, but in a restaurant it could be, you know, food service, ambience, right? And within those, there's more circles, but I don't need the biggest warehouse with the most expensive chandeliers, with the most expensive linen. It's just what speaks to the truth of this, you know, experience. And that's what a lot of the restaurants we've had, and we've had owners and managers ask us our opinions. And it's, you've ticked sort of all the boxes into what this should be, but the experience is not there because the circles don't overlap. The person designing this didn't talk to the person in the kitchen, and then talk to the chef, and then talk to the DJ, and then talk to the servers. Mm-hmm. So you are all operating in a vacuum, and the only centralized thing is the customer.
Yeah.
And they're having an awful time.
They're like, this
because it's dissonant.
Yeah.
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 And they don't even recognize it, but they feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if it's the music is too loud, or if it's too quiet, or it's too bright, or you didn't know what wine, I don't know. There's little things that doesn't cost anything.
No.
Yeah.
Knowing the volume of your restaurant, that doesn't cost any money. You know, maybe consulting about it, but
if you guys are struggling with vibes and ambience, I know two people who have got some ideas.
Yeah, and it's something that but that kind of comes down to, we have a passion for it because we want to see the city grow in a way that pushes the envelope. That because like you said, there are a lot of international people moving to Utah, and we're about to host the Olympics. Like, there's going to be, people want these experiences. And unfortunately, the restaurant with the bad food and the bad service that has the great Instagram wall is not going to cut it. It won't stand the test. You can
only take one picture in front of an Instagram wall. And even then, that's probably too much.
And even the people that, you know, like for us, like we're not going to do that. That's not what we go to. I want to wait. You know, I want to have a good time. Yeah.
Good ambiance. That's it. You know,
good
night. There's a lot of untapped potential, I think, in Utah. It's starting to pop off. It's starting to come up. But yeah.
There's some good things coming. And I was talking to released last week with Stuart Valling, who runs Gastronomic SLC. And he's like, there's so many good things happening and changing.
Mm hmm.
It's just it just takes a little bit of time. Yeah. So I'm like, I can be patient. Yeah. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's coming.
It takes time. It takes open-mindedness as well. You know, the people who are like, no, change. It's like, it's happening.
Yeah.
Let's embrace it. Let's make it work.
Couldn't agree.
Win-win, you know?
it's not like you can just wish things to change and they're just not going to change.
No,
of course.
No.
So we're starting to see, like, you know, better cocktail bars and better wine showing up, and like
a lot of like in the topic of like bars and cocktail bars. I remember when I was in college, I mean, we'd be like, okay, so we're going to, even Twist was like the end of my time, and then there was like a Bourbon House, which was fun. Like, there was just like three or four bars that you would like go to, and then now I'm like, oh. It used to be kind of almost like this, like there's a Second South part of things, there's a Main Street part of things, there's part of State Street, there's kind of other little floaters, but now it's like, there's so many and they're so unique. I mean, like Sayonara, like, and having that, like that Japanese street bar feel.
Yeah.
And then you have, like the more, why can't I think of a single goddamn bar? Oh, yeah. Like going to like the post office, like other Japanese bar.
Yeah.
She's like, so unique. But then like, I mean, one of my favorite bars is Seabird at Gateway, where, I mean, if you can find like some of their cocktail,
bartenders.
I was gonna say cocktail makers. I was like, that's
mixologist.
If we want to get extra title-y. But really great there. And so it's fun to see how much more like nuance and niche there. I mean, even like quarters and having like an arcade, but like it's no longer just where's the cool place everybody's going to and let's go there. Like, there's actually and like, because I was talking about it recently with someone else, where I mean, I love like what I don't know why I started calling it like an adult night out.
Yeah.
Where it's like Yeah, we go out. We have a reservation.
You start at 5:30
for a cocktail. Or growing up, so you don't have a reservation. Then you go put down your name. Let's go to another place for appetizers. Let's go to dinner.
Yeah.
Have a bottle of wine or two and be there for 2 or 3 hours. Oh, where's dessert? Oh, it's over here.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, should we get another
cocktail? We do that often.
Yeah. Like, it's so fun.
Favorite things.
Yeah.
And so I like that it's easier and easier to put those nights together and have more fun and even just like see people out to the level it's been. I there's a lot of optimism in the air. It's fun to see how much things have grown. I'm excited about it all.
Yeah.
I'm excited that other people are as excited because again, like it's like we have this conversation where like you'll talk to someone and they're like, oh, I can't believe this restaurant went out of business. Like, okay, when was the last time you went there? Like 5 years ago. I'm like, well,
that's when we went out of business. Yeah.
And so it's these places where we can go back to, we want to go back to, we know what we're getting.
And we have stalwarts that we must go to.
Exactly. We do. We have like the staples that we go to, and we're loyal customers for good food, service, and ambiance. Exactly. Like it really is those three. But here's the thing too, I say this to people all the time about Salt Lake. It's like I could go on and on about the reasons why I love living here. You know, it's safe, clean, affordable.
Yeah.
You know, airport.
Yeah, but it's nature.
I mean, it really. Yeah. And my family does live here, so that's a bias. Yeah. That is a bit of a bias. And my sister,
and most importantly,
I know. And my sister.
Mine does,
my sister just moved a block away. So that was actually really exciting for me. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, but it's.
It's great.
Did you guys say you live in the avenues?
We live in
Charlie Square.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we tried living in Holiday, and nothing against Holiday because it's beautiful if that's your style. I was suffocating.
Yeah, we're not burbs people.
We're not burbs. Yeah. No, we needed to move back to the city, and so we've been in Charlie Square for a couple of years, and I don't plan on leaving
anytime soon. We're pretty comfortable where we are.
And I just moved, so I used to live in like Yellcrest area, which was great. Like there's some cool places, but then I just moved like Marmalade District.
I love that.
For like 5 years. Like I've lived in cities enough where I just miss the energy of it. And I'm just
That's what it is. It's a buzz. Yeah. It's an energy and also the walkability of, especially when the weather is nice.
Yeah.
Like, I'll walk anywhere. It's, I love it.
Yeah, I walk a lot.
Love having that. Accessibility.
I think generally, you know, what I was thinking earlier is like Utah's, I always say this about Argentina. Argentina is a beautiful country, which has so much potential in terms of like resources and economy. There's so much that could be done, and we just keep like running it to the ground for some reason. But Utah's is in many ways, I think for many years, people saw this as like the place you came to die because the Mormons and the thing and the alcohol rules and the food wasn't, you know. But I think this is a city where they're actually being. They're very, very smart about being very proactive about making the city better.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll ever see this city and the state just gonna go down the wayside because I think the government is very aware of like, sure, listen, the Olympics coming. You need to have better transport. You need to have you need to have better food. You need to have better hotels. You need to have all the stuff. The airport has to be the right size. So I think they're being very smart about it's not that doesn't live in a vacuum, and they didn't have really good. And there's obviously precedent because the Olympic Park is still active and still exists and it's not they're not using it as a sniper rest like they did, you know. So like it's they're being very smart about it and that's I think there's a lot to be hopeful about the future of Utah because they're actually doing things and they're not just
and they will need lots of production and choreography to get these Olympics together.
Exactly.
All of them
we could work for. It's like your own like little version of work from home.
Well, you've only done, you do quite a bit of things here, MLMs. I've only done, I think, 5 shows in Utah since I've been here. Because we do big stuff and it's starting to. But you know, we've done a couple of things. We did a thing for Cadillac up in Park City. We just did a drone show up in Park City as well. I've done a couple of shows down here. But I think it's so funny to work from because it's so rare. Also because I travel so much for work that it's so rare to be like, oh, I live 3 blocks away from the thing. Yeah, sure. Like this is cool. It's bizarre. I drive to my car to the venue instead of like an airplane and Uber.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but we're excited. We're excited for, not only the future of the city, but like what you said, the Olympics. I mean, maybe twice, right? Like I think we're up for two Winter Olympics.
Look to them all.
And it's kind of funny that the
residency, Olympics, the residency in Vegas,
got it for 30 years,
Utah,
Know that the two worlds are colliding. Like, yes, dance, movement, ice skaters, choreography, production, lighting, design, you know, all of it's coming together. So, hopefully that's something that we can be a part of and kind of share what we do.
Yeah.
With Salt Lake.
It's our scale.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, guys, two questions before we kind of wrap up. First is, if you guys could have someone on the Small Lake City podcast and hear about their story, who would you want to hear from?
From Utah or just?
Someone who's, I mean.
Is Post Malone available?
I mean, he's available. Let's see if we can. He's on my pie in the sky list. One day it'll happen.
We should talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Yeah, we should talk. We'll make some inroads.
Whose story would I want to hear? Or like
anybody who has a story, or anybody who you, I mean, think is interesting, anybody who got here via an interesting story, cool people doing cool stuff, cool business owners, cool restaurants.
Cool there's a, I can't remember his name now. There's a graphic artist. He spends most of his time in Palm Springs. And I was supposed to see him when I was there and I didn't get to see him. But he does half his time. He does stuff here in Utah. So I will call him from Utah. Okay. I think he's like 80-20.
Hey, we'll take it.
But I think that there is sort of like a really weird little hidden art scene in Utah, which is really good.
Don't get me started.
So I think getting someone from there to explain like what their vision of how you tie art into the city, because I think that's going to be important when as they're beautifying the city, that we're going to need more.
We need more whale tails.
Yeah.
We need more apricots. What other weird things do we have right now? Have you guys seen the apricot and marmalade?
No.
Yeah. I didn't know until, I mean, I moved there and I was running around.
Yeah. I think what I'd love to see is more interesting architecture.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of been the thing that's and nationwide from what we've been reading and seeing is the lack of architecture in the new buildings going up.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad. Like sometimes I'm like, oh no, another
one. We both love Chicago so much. And that's like the mega beautiful architecture. Yeah. Like,
oh, cool. Another stucco box or another bright brick.
Yeah.
I'm not like, I do a lot of shows in the Middle East. Like, we do a lot of massive events over there. So like, let's do a Burj Khalifa and Salt Lake. That's just a different level. But I think there's stuff that could complement, the city much better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good, Salt Lake architect to explain why they're not doing the thing.
Yeah. Can we get that person on?
Grill him.
Yeah. Actually, I think I know two or three guys that actually make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got to have the power to make decisions. Like what we kind of already talked about. It's like, hire this person and trust them. Not put up another...
Another awful render.
Well, yeah, we call them renders. We're like, oh, another render went up.
You can't tell. They look just like they're
there's no soul.
There's no soul.
And my mom lives in Gilchrist area, and she always talks about like I think it's Sugarmont's the one building in like Sugar House, and she's like, they all just look like we don't need any more Sugarmont. We don't need any.
Yeah.
I was like, I agree, Mom. You get your picket.
Get it,
and you just go.
I would join. I told you that.
I would join too.
I told you. I was like, that's something I would pick it for, and I don't think I'd want to pick it for just about anything.
There is a building called the Randy, by the way. Yeah, there is. It is. Yeah,
but it's one of the. I mean, it's not.
You're like, I'll take it.
Cool, but it really is like Randi too. Yeah. I'm like, oh my god, I have a building.
My building.
I have a building on like.
Show your friends. Like, have you guys seen my business?
I was like, have you seen my building? You own it? Well, no, but my name's on it.
According to childhood logic, it is
actually mine.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
No, I love that. Yeah. And then, lastly, if people want to find out more about, Randi, your choreography on demand coaching, Iggy, the work you're doing, what's the best place to find you guys?
So my production company is Strong Productions, because my name is Randi Strong. Strong Productions. And my online studio is Studio Strong Ice. So it's really easy to find me on social media. Just Randi Strong. You can find everything about me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Easy enough.
Yeah, it was easier than mine.
Yeah,
it
is.
Yeah,
it is.
My firm is called Light Switch. So I'm one part of a big design firm. Mm-hmm. So lightswitch.net. For some reason, I don't know what happened with the .com. Like, it'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. The budget.
Yeah.
I think somebody bought it before us. We went around for 30 years. But apparently, even that wasn't enough to like buy the right domain name. So lightswitch.net and then Iggy Lights at Instagram.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Salt Lake City, Trolley Square. I don't know.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Small Lake City Podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, review, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends. And we'll catch you next week. We'll see you there.